Hey Zwifters, welcome to another episode of the Zwiftcast, and hello to my usual co-conspirators, the voice of Zwift, Nathan Guerra, yo dude.
Hey, how's it going?
And the llama himself, Shane Miller, g'day mate.
G'day Simon, how's things?
Good with me, thank you very much. But Nathan, let's get straight to the hot news, the collarbone. For those who don't Nathan had a bad crash. So take it from there, Nathan. Tell us what happened and what's happened since.
Well, you can actually see the crash on my SciOI live feed. So if you want to actually see, well, from a first-person perspective, I was doing an enduro race. It was a blind run in the Midwest Mountain Bike Championships. And it just a little bit of a slip of a tire and full on downhill and a tree just in the right place to snap my shoulder. So, well, not my shoulder off, but yeah, pretty much full on shoulder check to a tree at full speed downhill. And I just felt my body kind of go down more than usual on the right side. And I knew right away that something, I knew right away it was a collarbone. Actually, that's what I thought immediately. So yeah, I broke the collarbone.
And how far are you into the healing process?
So we are 11 days in and 4 rides on the bike so far, actually.
Hey, well done.
We're doing really well. We're bouncing back quick. And, you know, peak fitness helps with that, I think. Also, in our coaching, we focus a lot on, like, deep nutrition. And so we've just been slamming everything that supports bone growth, trauma reduction, you know. And so we're really set up well for a quick recovery, and it's coming around really nicely. I'm really encouraged, actually. At first, I was like, I'm devastated and searching everywhere. And Shane was really helpful, actually. He sent me some stuff. And, you know, as far as like info, because you've had how many, Shane?
Of these? I've done four collarbone breaks. I've done 2 on each side just to balance myself out. Yeah.
So, you know, as a cyclist, I've never broken a bone, but it happens eventually. It sounds like with some of us. I don't want to say that for everybody, you know, but. You know, I don't wish this one on anyone, though. This is a tough one.
No, it's horrible. In the early days of the whole marginal gains thing, Dave Brailsford was doing a talk to the some MPs in the House of Commons here in the UK. And he talked about a track rider who'd broken his collarbone. And he said to the MPs, we seriously contemplated using the opportunity to of a broken collarbone to shorten the bones when we put him back together to narrow his frontal area and improve his aerodynamic profile. It was actually a joke, but it was amazing how many people thought it could well have been true. But so anyway, Shane, you're in one piece, I hope.
Yeah, I am now after my 4. But as you mentioned about the marginal gains, that's the first thing I asked my surgeon when he was like either bolting it or putting a hook plate in or a plate in. I said, well, what can I use to pull my shoulders in? Because one of my key things is the frontal area and being aerodynamic. And that is all about pulling your shoulders straight in. So to me, when you mentioned that, I'm just nodding. That made sense. Absolutely. Yeah. But yeah, if you look at it from a standard person point of view, you're like, that's kind of crazy. But
I think Brailsford's punchline on that story was, and that was when we realized we were going too far.
For sure.
Anyway, on with Zwifty things. And, you know, this incident, Nathan, gives us a chance and has given you a chance, I suppose, to consider Zwift as a rehab tool, which is how an awful lot of people use it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm already on the bike. I mean, I wouldn't have been on the bike already without Zwift, at least as much. I think 4 rides already. A lot of motivation, lots of people. Also, the amount of people who are messaging me in Zwift and the community of riders that have come around me. I think a lot of people become isolated from their community of riders when this kind of thing happens because they can't ride with them. And that's the main way they connect with those people. I think I've seen other people as well with this same injury or injuries that have kept them from the bike that have kept a sense of community and connectedness to cycling and the thing that makes cycling for a lot of people, which is the people around them who are biking too. So it's been great.
Yeah. No, it's a very good point, actually. It's a really good point because you drop out of your usual milieu if you're injured and can't ride. My milieu, Shane, on a Wednesday morning, my time at least, has been this HDR ride, which just seems to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
We're up to 250 riders on a Wednesday night over here for our group ride. It's we did a really big push the other week just to see how far we could get it. So a lot of us on our social platforms are encouraging everyone to come along, and it boosted up really well. Last night, we had the ride again, and it was 250 without any notification at all. We just sort of said, yeah, everyone's coming along, and it just without that much promotion. So we'll be up around 300 for sure by the end of winter here. It's really, really great. It's a great bunch. Tim Searle, who leads the ride now, has a few lieutenants up the front and then out the back as well. So it's just a fantastic ride. And those last laps, or the last two laps now on the London course, are flat out. They are true racing. And a lot of people also roll off the back. I, the other day, said, well, it's an easy day for me. I'll join in for the easier laps and then just swing off and ride with the slower riders at the end. And I had a great time. So absolutely loving it.
Yeah, well, I am now going to pronounce it officially, or at least according to the Zwiftcast, as the biggest ride on Zwift, because I don't know any bigger ones. I've not seen any bigger ones. Yep. As you said, Shane, the guy behind it is a guy called Tim Searle. So I thought it was time we caught up with him. So I talked to Tim just after this week's HDR, and this is what he told me about how the ride started.
I've always enjoyed fitness and cycling. I love tech and computers, so Zwift is always going to be my sort of thing. One of the best features of Zwift is that you can turn a boring solo indoor training session into a social experience. I think one of the best things about cycling is the social aspect. I found at the time that there wasn't too much of the organised social riding available to me on Zwift, mainly due to Australia's location and time zones. Other Aussies were finding the same thing. So this sort of led to the HDR, the hump day ride, being born at sort of 7 o'clock. And Wednesday was a free night at the time. So it suited most people I spoke to. So we started from there.
Yeah, and by how it's grown. What do you think is the big appeal?
I just wanted something that was going to appeal to most people, something for everyone. So we have the main ride at a sort of easy, moderate pace on a flatter course that is available to us at the time, but, to try and keep the group together as best we can. And then we have an after party ride. It's a full blast race lap for those that really want to stretch their legs afterwards. So really, we just want to try and have something for everybody.
Yeah. How many people go on to do the after party?
It's very hard to say. I like to keep the beacon that I have towards the front, even in the after party. So by the time we get to there, I'm just flat out trying to keep up. It just seems to get faster and faster every week. But I would guess we probably get around about half, I would say, attempt it. And right. For some people, it's, you know, they're going for the win. They're going to try and get to the line first. Other people are just trying to hold on for longer than they could the week before. So, it, you know, there's something for everyone there, even sure. In the after party lap.
Now, Tim, I'm going to ask you this because, I wondered, because I did the after party a couple of weeks ago, and I think I finished in something like the second or the third group, but the main group was away, you know, they were up the road, the fastest group. Do you finish in the fastest group?
Yeah, I try to. I do most weeks. As I say, I like to try and keep that beacon right to the front for as long as I can, so that the people that are in different groups behind generally can, even if they're falling back, they can still sort of see where the front is, how far back they are. It just helps pull them along, I think. But yeah. Geez, it just gets harder and harder to keep up the front.
Yeah. I think one of the really appealing things about the ride is the way that you pace it, because, you know, it's hard enough to be kind of challenging, but it's not crazy, crazy fast the whole way around. So, you know, even if you don't do the after party, you feel like you've done a decent workout at a good pace, but you do manage to keep the group together. Is that a pacing trick? Or is it just that you command enormous respect and people listen to what you say?
I think it's a bit of a mixture of both. I think it's not an easy thing to do. Certainly the beacon and the event module, you know, having the text in the middle and things like that, and having the ability to talk to people before the ride makes things a lot easier than it used to be. The old days before the event module and the beacon, trying to keep 200 people together was hard work.
Yeah. you're not kidding. Because, you know, cyclists, they're not the most disciplined of guys, are they, sometimes?
could say that again.
Yeah. Well, it is an absolutely terrific ride and a roaring success. How big do you think it could get? I mean, was 250 the record?
Last night we actually trialed the first London version, and we had 248 last night. So we seem to be sort of around that figure. It is starting still to creep up, so I don't think it'll be too long before we hit 300.
What are your tips to budding ride leaders? You know, how do you pull off this terribly difficult trick of herding cats?
Herding cats, I like that. I think really the main thing is to try and make the ride as simple as you can. Try and keep things very, very straightforward. The easier and the more straightforward things you can do, then the better time you're going to have and the easier job you're going to have, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Clearly you're going to run the HDR all the way through winter. Do you think you'll carry it on through the Southern Hemisphere spring and summer?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. There's absolutely no reason why not. I suspect the numbers will stay pretty close to where they are.
Excellent. Well, congratulations on starting and very effectively leading what is the biggest ride on Zwift. And I've really enjoyed doing it whenever I've done it. And I'd urge anybody else to give it a try. It's a great ride. Thanks very much, Tim.
Thank you.
Fantastic work by Tim. And as you were saying earlier, Shane, he's got some helpers now, which you kind of need if you're trying to keep 250 riders together. But the first time on the London course, and we should really talk about the new course. What do you think, Shane?
Just as the London course was released, we've been waiting for how many months for this? So many months. I was on an aeroplane ready to take off, and I was having radio silence for the next 4 hours, so I couldn't do anything. So I'm quickly refreshing my phone and having a look. Finally got on the other night. I live streamed the ride around, and it was a great new new environment altogether. I was sort of looking more sideways than forward. It was really good. Yeah, really enjoy it. There's a lot of phone boxes in London. There's also a lot of bus stops and the rain.
Yeah, how about that? We'll get to the rain in a minute.
Yeah.
Nathan, you think as a race commentator that the London course is a good profile.
The changes in the course are always coming at you. You know what I mean? There's some flat sections, there's really steep pitches, there's a longer climb, but it's always changing. And so it really gives everybody's talents a chance to shine, I think. And I've noticed in the first few broadcasts for racing here that it's a little bit more dynamic racing. Somebody might go off the front for a while, and then, you know, a group works together a little bit more. And the splits are not as divisive. They don't happen as decisively. It's like, oh, here's the Watopia climb. It's a 2-minute climb. Those who can climb for 2 minutes at an all-out effort really create a gap, and then that's over. You know what I mean? And then the Essies come, and then whatever. Or it's a mountain route, and who's a good climber? You know, and so, or on Richmond, it was like, who can punch it for 30 seconds over and over, and then hang on for the flat. But now we have this course that has, you know, 4% thrown at you here, there, and the other place. And then you got, you know, and so it just has all these opportunities for people to really be dynamic in their racing. Mm-hmm. And now that KISS and a few of the other races have really started to organize around some teams, we've seen some really interesting team tactics being employed on the London course specifically. So I'm really excited about it as a commentator, but also as a rider. It's really cool to have just a new environment. They've actually also added like some new sounds, and you know, the environment is definitely been changing, and that's always nice to have us too.
Yeah, and of course one of the key ways in which the environment has changed is the introduction of bad weather into the world of Zwift. I'm going to put my cards on the table. I like the rain. I think it's great. And guess what, guys? To the people who are complaining about it, you don't actually get wet. You know, it's only virtual rain. But I love the rain. What do you think, Shane?
Oh, look, I'm not a fan of the nighttime riding on there as well, because a lot of my training is done at night. And I want to escape that and be on a virtual island or somewhere nice and shiny. But the other night, I was sitting on the start line, and it was pouring rain inside and outside. And it was very surreal. But the effect of it was really, really great. And when the rain stops, there's still a bit of a sheen off the road splashing off your tires. So they've done some really good work on this. I like it as well.
I was actually really impressed while commentating today, actually, in the KISS race. looking at the rain, and I was doing a couple different views. I was punching through the numbers with the views to get looks at the riders, how well they did actually to create this immersive environment with the graphics and how the rain was splashing off the riders and off their tires. And I was really impressed with the graphics of it. I like the change that it brings to fighting the environment as well. Racing is not, and riding in Zwift isn't just against the competitors. Then you do get a little bit more of a feel that like things are coming at you too, and you've got to push through that. So well, I think it brings a little more real life to it.
Well, yeah, and in fact, talking of real life, I mean, you know, John Mayfield was saying in the last Zwiftcast that it's not that big a deal these days to use the accelerometer on a phone, maybe mounted on the handlebars. So imagine that we're in that place already and it's raining and you have to keep a line going around a corner to avoid sliding out and falling over. I mean, that, you know, that could be done, I would have thought, Shane, fairly easily.
My collarbones start twitching at that thought already. But yeah, for sure. There's a lot of technology that I'm sure is going to be unlocked very soon.
Yeah. Well, I prodded one of the Zwift execs on that. I was lucky enough to spend some time with Charlie Issendorf, and we were talking about events. But later in the interview, I prodded him on stuff that may happen. So let's hear from Charlie on how he feels the events are going to develop in Zwift over the coming weeks. Welcome to the podcast to Charlie Issendorf, who will be a familiar name to Zwifters because he's the guy who sorts out all the events, amongst many other things, at Zwift. So, Charlie, why don't you tell us what those other things are too?
Well, thanks for having me, Simon. I appreciate you taking the time to speak with me. So, what do I do? Well, my full title is the VP of Events. So I organize virtual events with the help of the community, the races, the group rides that you've probably seen already. And I also help the team at Zwift with real world events. This can be a combination of trade show booths that Zwift is a part of. Oftentimes our partners will want Zwift in their booths as kind of an activation tool. So I assist with that. And any other kind of real world demos, etc. So that's what I do in a nutshell.
Charlie, just tell us a little bit in a few words about your cycling history. I know you used to race.
Yeah, I actually started racing in 1978 when I was 8 years old. My dad had started racing in 1956, and he started dragging me to races when I was 6 years old. But in the U.S., you can't get a license until you're 8 years old.
Wow.
So, yeah, as soon as I turned eight, I told my dad, that's it, I want to race. So, I started racing when I was eight and raced at a pretty high level. I was a Category 1 cyclist in the U.S. I raced with the U.S. national team in the Tour of Chile in South America. I raced with the U.S. national team in the Tour of Greece. So, I was really blessed and fortunate to have a very long career.
The event module was launched after much anticipation. And to me, it looks actually to have gone pretty flawlessly. I mean, I think there have been one or two tiny glitches, but it looks to have been a great launch. How has it looked from the Zwift side of the fence?
We're very pleased with how events are going so far. And a lot of that has to do with the feedback from the community. And that's always been the way Zwift operates. We put out something that, in our opinion, is good and works well, and then we wait for the community to chime in with any changes, upgrades, or just pure suggestions that they like. But yeah, I mean, all along, the goal of events on Zwift was to first off have a corralling area, the ability for people to actually come together at a certain time. So when we launched the corralling area, it allowed people to come together, to warm up together, and even, as you probably have seen, to chat together in a private group.
Just for, you know, there may be some Zwifters who haven't joined an event. Just walk us through it. If you were going to join an event, what would you do?
Well, the first thing I would do is go to the mobile app. So if you haven't downloaded the Zwift mobile app, that's a good place to start. When you open up the app, you'll see a tab actually for events. And when you click on it, all the events that are coming up will be displayed in your local time, which is really cool. So it's no more time conversions or anything. Yeah. So you'll see the upcoming events and you can click on it to join. When you actually open up Zwift on your computer, you will already be joined in the event. So you log on, and in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the event, and you just click on it, and you'll be automatically joined.
I'm just gonna stop you there, Charlie, just to be super, super, super clear. So if you join on the app, are you automatically then in the event, or do you still have to join the event when you open Zwift on the PC?
You still have to join the event when you open up on the PC.
Okay.
You're basically, think of it this way, you're registered for the event, but you still have to actually get into the event.
Cool. Yeah, that's a good way of thinking.
And you'll be prompted to do it, so you can't miss it. It's pretty easy.
Yeah. Now, can you join an event after it started?
Unfortunately, no. We've had some requests from people to actually be able to do that. But right now, no. Once an event starts, very similar to the real world. If you miss the event, unfortunately, you showed up late. However, you know, one of the things that we always think about it on at Zwift is, you know, should Zwift be like the real world? One of the things that would be cool is perhaps if you were able to join an event in progress. So, you know, there's no worse feeling, and I'm sure every serious cyclist has felt this, than showing up to a group ride late. And sometimes it's not your fault. Maybe you got a flat tire on the way there, or maybe you were driving to the event and you got caught in traffic. So, you know, the similar things could happen in the virtual world. You had a trouble connecting or logging on, or you know, you were racing home from work and you got caught into a little traffic. So, I mean, it's something we're thinking about, but right now, no, there's no way to join an event once it started.
Right. But you've not ruled it out.
We haven't ruled it out. I mean, we never rule out anything. If the community demands it and wants it, then yeah, we'll do our best to get it in if it makes sense.
Yeah. Now the app on the mobile app seems to me now to be the kind of go-to place now for finding out a bit about events. Has it got everything on it? Because a lot of people used the Team Up calendar. Is that kind of now overtaken by the mobile app?
Well, when we first launched events in Zwift, one of the things I did was to contact all the people from the Team Up calendar to let them know that they can be part of events on Zwift now if they choose. So I would say the majority of the events that are on the Team Up calendar are now in Zwift as an official Zwift event. But I haven't checked the Team Up calendar in a while, so there could be other events. I mean, from time to time, you'll see me post on the Zwift Ride Leaders or Race Organizers page on Facebook or some of the other pages, and I post them just to let people know that, you know, there is a way for them to be part of this.
Yeah.
And then once in a while, you know, I track the groups and periodically somebody will say, you know, I have a ride and I'd like to use the Zwift events. How do I go about doing that? And then I'll chime in and let them know the next steps.
Yeah. So it seems to me the app is pretty comprehensive now.
Yeah. The majority of the events are on there. But, you know, as we head into the Northern Hemisphere winter, I expect to see a lot more groups, a lot more races. So I think the number of events that are going to be featured is going to, I would say, double.
More from Charlie later on in the Zwiftcast. Now, the sharp-eyed amongst Zwifters will have spotted on the new London course that actually the very distinctive shape of the velodrome that was built for the 2012 Olympics can be spotted, which immediately prompts thoughts that Zwift could introduce track racing and velodrome racing. What do we think about that, Shane?
I'm all for it. Definitely. I've done a little bit of track work in my day, probably 4 or 5 years ago, doing a pursuit and the kilo efforts. And they're the most, or some of the hardest racing I've ever, ever done. They're very short, but they're a really, really good way to measure yourself. Effectively like a hill climb comm, I guess, on Watopia. But you could do it on the flats on a velodrome. I'm all for it. I'd love to see it. Small group racing, or even better, I'd love to finish a race with 1.5 laps of velodrome. I think we all know the race I'm talking about.
Yeah. Nathan, harder or easier to commentate on?
I think it'll be much easier. I think it will bring the hype of the moment that we all wait for in the sprint, that we all wait for in the climb. It's going to be a continual. So as the rhythm of broadcasting goes, you have these lulls and it's like peaks and valleys and peaks and valleys. We're going to be peaking continually with the excitement. And I really like that. I like the quick change up. I'm all for it. I do think, though, that it's racing specific, so that brings up an issue. As you're creating an entire feature that is seems to be racing specific, or at least event specific, that is fairly competitive as you're just going around in circles. I mean, you could just ride around in circles for fun if you want to, but I think that with that, there's going to be a little more fine-tuning, you know, that people are going to be asking for and wanting for, and create more of a drive for that fine-tuning.
There'd have to be a bit of crowd control as well, wouldn't it? I mean, you couldn't surely have 500 riders in the velodrome all at one time.
So from a gaming standpoint, I think that some of the bread and butter of the best multiplayer online, massive multiplayer onlines, is quick games, like quick pickup games that last real quick, and then you come back out and then you go back in the competition. And the separating of instances is the way that they get that done. You, when you're in like the World of Warcraft, you actually enter a separate place that it's its own little realm or instance or whatever it is, and you compete, and that's separated from everybody else. That's probably maybe how it'd have to go, and you could then maybe click on, who knows, this is all conjecture obviously, but then you click on, if you want to spectate, you can click on somebody's game and it loads the game.
Yeah.
And so then you can watch and spectate that. And so who knows how they would do it. There might be a few drones all running at the same time, and so okay, crowd control, you have to wait in line, etc. I mean, there's probably lots of different ways that they're thinking about doing this if it's something on their radar.
Well, and the thing is, Shane, we are speculating wildly here just because we've seen a shot of the velodrome in on the London course that there might be track racing. And when I interviewed Eric around about a year ago, he actually sounded quite negative towards a track. He was worried it would be boring and that you know it wouldn't accommodate lots of riders. But it seems to me now as though They will go for a velodrome setup of some kind, don't you think?
Oh, look, I'd love to see it. I love this future thinking about what could be, and a lot of it's community driven. So I think it's been really positive so far to hear what people are hoping to see and how people will use it. Now, people are already thinking, I guess the guys behind the races are already thinking, well, how could we use that? So their thoughts are already ticking over. So if they build it, we will come.
Yeah, absolutely right. Absolutely right. Now, I spent some time talking to a really interesting guy who is, he has a curious title and it kind of betrays what Team Sky are all about, in that he's called the head of innovation. And I'm fairly certain that only one pro team has a head of innovation, and that kind of has the inevitable results of what we see from Team Sky. He's called Simon Jones, and he's a Zwifter, and he had some interesting things to say about Zwift and also about the use of virtual and augmented reality. Here's Simon. Hi, Simon. Welcome to the podcast, and thank you for joining us.
Hello there. Pleased to be here. Thank you for having me.
I'm really interested to know what somebody with your palmares in the cycling technology world thinks of Zwift.
Well, I'm a Zwifter, if that's a real word. So
It is.
So I've got limited time to train, and I know that if I train quite hard and do high intensity training, I get sort of bigger gains, and I've got a watt bike, in my cellar, and it just seemed the natural. And I was bored of setting myself training and looking at data. And I think just having that environment around you, time flies by. You can join a group, you can do your own sessions, once or twice a week for me, I actually do look forward to going down and getting on the watt bike, or on the trainer. Whereas before, it was like a bit of a penance, I suppose, to do it.
It's a familiar story. And I think testament actually to Zwift's innovation, focusing on the area that you spend a lot of time thinking about. Now, I know there are horrendous commercial sensitivities about questions like these, but do any Team Sky riders use Zwift?
I'm not sure if they do, actually. So there might be a couple of secret Zwifters there, but not that I've heard of.
Do you think pro riders in general could benefit from the platform? I mean, there are several pro riders on it, and of course there's the famous story about Massey Hayman using it before Paris-Roubaix.
I think in Matt Hayman's example, I know a very limited amount of that, but when you're under extreme circumstances as a pro rider and you can't go outdoors and you're faced with doing the same thing, I can see why it is appealing. Given the choice for me, maybe for other, I can't speak for other people, but if I had the time to go outdoors, I would do that personally, because I find that more invigorating. But I can also see that if you do want to have that extra stimulation or different stimulation, it does provide a really good alternative. And so maybe in the future you might find pro riders doing it if they train on their own a lot and they want some different mental engagement and some different structure.
Do you think that in the future virtualization or augmented reality or simulation of some kind is going to have a part to play in pro rider and serious amateur training?
Augmented reality, I think it's going to be quite big. Imagine, for example, having a cycling simulator where you could practice in an immersive environment descending. Like, we don't practice descending because it's too risky to do it. I think virtuality won't be big. I think augmented reality will be, because virtual reality, there's too many issues, I think, with the practicalities of that. But the augmented reality, where you can push information in your real settings, you still need some sort of headset for that, which will push images in your field of view. You could use it for any situation, really. So you could use it for things like set plays and team time trials, because in our sport and in pro cycling, you don't get familiar with courses. Every race, depending on when they publish the course, it's a new route. You might, some climbs, for example, would be familiar, and I think knowing the course is really important, particularly for pacing and making sure that you deliver your effort when you need to. So that could be something, and we do a fair bit on that now, but it's within the constraints of the current technology. So you could imagine a situation where you could model the course and it is that you're there you're virtually there with the most sophisticated simulations. I've been to like aircraft sim, which is like £30 million simulators, which are amazing. They're almost immersive, but what your brain, like, the problem with virtuality or any simulation is that it's not real, and your brain knows it's not real, and therefore it disengages. So there's been a fair bit of work done on this, and that's the issue with the simulation, because I think it'd be fantastic to have simulator, but how would you recreate the forces and the gravity of like descending? Yeah. Who knows?
And I've got to ask you this question because I know people will be interested in hearing the answer from someone as well qualified as you. How do you rate the value of indoor training?
Very high, actually. It just gives you very good quality, very specific training dose. There's no junk with it, and it's really quantifiable. So as I said, I just said I like to go out on the road, but you need to balance what you do with training on the road and getting some specific work done. So Very high value for me.
Thank you very much indeed for talking to the Zwiftcast, and it's been fascinating to hear that at least one person attached to Team Sky is an active Zwifter. Lovely. Thanks very much indeed, Simon.
Okay, thank you.
So to sum up, guys, what Simon was saying was interesting on two levels, really. He was saying that that augmented or virtual reality could be useful as a really serious rehearsal tool for a pro team, for instance, who didn't have time to recce a team time trial course. He didn't seem to have made that leap to Zwift, and I wonder how big that gap is for a pro team to use something as a serious tool for reconnaissance. I mean, that's not possible on Zwift at the moment, Nathan, because you know we're limited to certain courses. But you could see a world where that was possible.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, looking at something that was, you know, brought up was this idea of spending $30 million on an aircraft simulator in order to create. I mean, militaries all over the world are doing this. I mean, it's obviously simulators can create some sort of an experience in order to get people ready for the real life thing. That's just a reality. We already see that in practice and big money going into it. I think that there's a few steps that need to be taken, though. You're going to need immediacy of response. Like, if you want the course to feel like the real course, the trainers are going to have to be responsive a lot quicker. Yeah. And they're also going to have to be synced in some sort of way. So all the trainers from everybody who are training together in their team camp online are, you know, feeling the same thing at the same exact time. That's the first thing that comes to my mind there. The other thing, being, you know, how much of the environment are you getting? How much are you getting to have to tuck and different kinds of things like that at different times? Like, how are you responding to the environment with your body? Because that's all a talent that's needed as well. Those are things that could be implemented, I would think, though, too. I mean, with us talking about different kinds of interactive materials like handlebar buttons and other things like that in order to at least make you simulate doing those things and having some muscle memory and thought memory about that with the course.
Yeah, yeah. The other interesting thing that Simon Jones said, Shane, was that the research that he's looked at suggests that no matter how immersive the environment, you can't fool the brain into thinking it's a real experience. Now, this guy knows his stuff, but I kind of beg to differ, actually, because racing on Zwift, I think, feels just as real as racing a crit in the real world.
Yeah, really interesting ones. I think Nathan nailed it. You have to be fully immersed. The flight simulators do really, really a great job of immersing yourself in exactly the same environment. The things tilt, the on hydraulics, everything. You wouldn't know you're in a different world. Out on the bike, it's a whole other world. The wind is blowing and there's so many random factors. I think it'd be great for things like team time trial formation and time to like pull a turn on the front and then swing off. There'd be things like that. But as for familiarization with courses, that'd be very, very tricky. But in the future, let's say 10 years down the track where we've got wind, we've got full headsets with full HD or super HD by then or something like that, I think we're getting very close. Mm. But where we're at the moment, I think it'll have to be focused around more of the bunch dynamics rather than the environment. Sort of, yeah, the time on the front, who takes the turn, and even position in the bunch as well. I know on the track, they do a lot of work on who pulls the first turn in a track sprint, second and third, and being familiar with that and watching someone pull off to the side and knowing it's your turn to accelerate. So I think there's opportunity to do that at the current position we're at with the technology. But in the future, I can't wait to see what's coming up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and we've seen the importance of that, though, Shane, what you just talked about in the Pro Peloton. And we've seen a well-oiled machine dominate, absolutely dominate when it comes to whose turns when, who, yeah. You know what I mean? All that kind of stuff. But we've also seen it fall apart. You know what I mean? And so I think that kind of a tool would be extremely important.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was interesting that you mentioned, I think you both mentioned headsets, and, you know, Oculus Rift is not far away. I was lucky enough to be given a demo of Zwift on Oculus Rift, and it was, like, amazing. I mean, the words don't really exist to properly describe it, but it was Zwifting on another level. I mean, it was just incredible. And again, if you keep a close eye on the Facebook groups, people have noticed that Mark Zuckerberg has been spotted on Swift. For those who can't quite put a name to the face, that's the guy who owns Facebook. And apparently is a very serious cyclist. Now, is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? Is it a good thing in that he could aim lots of amazing tech dollars at making Zwift even better? Or is it a bad thing because we think he might come along and buy Zwift as his own personal little plaything? What do you think, Nathan?
So I think it's a great thing. I think the more tech people we have paying attention to Zwift and liking Zwift, the fact that he's using Zwift is pretty awesome. And I'm not afraid one bit of that. I am interested in more development backing, broader market strokes and scope. If Zwift grows, we see so much more of the things that we're all talking about here. We're sitting here dreaming up awesome things that we can do with Zwift, and the community's asking for all this stuff. And the more backing, the more development, somebody like Zuckerberg get involved, that would be absolutely amazing. And you know, I don't think guys like him got to where they are without some awesome innovation and some good think tanks. So
yeah. I you know, the fears that people may express about buying it could just be completely ill-founded. I think Eric said, Shane, that just because Mark Zuckerberg likes hamburgers, he's probably not going to buy McDonald's.
That was a brilliant quote from Eric on that one, for sure.
Now, so much news, so much to talk about. Running on Zwift. Again, people have posted video, and we know it's John Mayfield, the kind of chief creative force behind Zwift. He's made no secret of it, and that looks like the next stage of development for the platform rather than the cycling tool. Nathan, they're presumably going to share the same world as cyclists.
Yeah, I was looking at that today, at first, I didn't know what to think about it. And then I got really hopeful about all the new people that would be introduced to the world of Zwift, the new training tool for people. I mean, that, I think, for me, running on a treadmill, oh my goodness.
Yeah, like, yeah. Well, running full stop.
I used to run. I enjoyed running prior to being a full, you know, time cyclist. But, having that environment, I think it'd be great for the triathletes. That's somebody I think of right away, that they can, you know, if they're need to ride at night and then go jump to the run outside, well, instead they can just have it right there and jump right into the same space. There's all these cool developments they can do on the software and on the recording end of what you have in game for how many miles you've racked up. Well, now we can't do swimming, but I don't know, you can start doing duathlons and who knows what. I mean, it really opens up a lot of really cool options. And we're all this term that I'm starting to use, this active gaming, you know, there's this with augmented reality and VR. I think
Pokemon
active
Go.
Gaming,
yep.
Pokemon Go. I mean, I did a Pokemon Go stream the other day. 35,000 people came through in 24 hours. It was huge. Wow. Like, they went absolutely nuts in the Twitch channel. And I think that active gaming, I think we're just on the ground floor. And I think things like bringing in running to Zwift, and I think we're just going to keep on seeing stuff like this. And I'm super excited about it. I'm actually like doing searches on augmented reality, like every other day. Like, what's the next thing? I want to find the next thing. Like, how can I get involved with whatever's coming next, kind of a thing.
Yeah. I don't want cars, but I could live with runners on Zwift. Shane, how about you?
Yeah, for sure. I'd love to see it. The first shot we saw was John Mayfield posting on Strava. He put out a screenshot and I went wild at that. I'm like, oh, and I had the same thoughts as Nathan. Where's this going to go? What's this going to take? It looked pretty polished straight away.
Yeah.
And then some people spotted, they unlocked it last night and there was actually a runner on the London course and people were putting videos up on the Zwift Oz group and it was hilarious. The response from that was, I think it was really, really positive, which was good to see. There's a lot of, you know, cyclists versus triathletes, but for me, I say bring them all together, and we can have a great time on this virtual world.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other good thing, I think, for us early supporters of Zwift, and current supporters of Zwift is that runners would bring more revenue to the platform, which means more development and more financial security. So, yeah, I'm all for it. I detest and loathe running, but I've got no beef against runners. They're nearly always injured the whole time anyway, so you know, they're not going to get in our way too much, are they? Anyway, as I had Charlie Isendorf, the Zwift exec, on the line, I thought I'd better ask him to see if he could tell me and the Zwiftcast listeners a little bit more about the Running Man, and here's what he said. I was looking around Facebook today and I saw John Mayfield's avatar running around the London course. Charlie, what was that all about?
It's something we're testing. Right. What we always said was that Zwift, while it's definitely catering to cycling, we want Zwift to be a fitness platform. And we want to make, all sports that could possibly use Zwift be included. So we're testing running right now. And it's a little bit of an unknown for us. We come from serious cycling backgrounds. Some of us have run. John has, done some running because he was a triathlete, so he probably knows a heck of a lot more than I do about running. It's something we're testing right now. We don't know when it would launch. It'll probably be in beta for a while, but what we always do at Zwift is we take our time with things.
Yeah.
So we'll probably put it out there and see what people think.
Well, it's interesting to see things moving forward continuously, because I know you're a small team, but to see constant development is encouraging, even though you'll never, ever, ever get me running anywhere. Now, any new things upcoming as the Northern Hemisphere winter gets nearer and nearer that you can tease us about?
Well, I think the events platform is going to get bigger and better. Let's just put it that way. There are some things that we're working on. In the meantime, we're going to see a lot more events coming up.
Give us a hint. Give us a hint, Charlie, about what you're
well,
working on.
Well, I think it's hard. We don't like to say too much. But I think we're just going to keep doing more of what you're already seeing. There's going to be new features added to events over time. One of the things that we've been asked for, but we haven't done yet, is asking for results from events. We definitely don't want to say that these are races right now, but people have asked if they could see how they scored or what their finishing time was. So, that's one thing that we've been playing around with a little bit. But I think that what we want to do is we want to keep making the rides better and better in terms of the rider leader beacons and what we can do in terms of perhaps messaging rides better. One of the things that we introduced on the Aussie HDR ride the other day was, if anybody tuned in, they heard Tim, who's the ride leader of that ride, give some race announcements via audio.
Yeah.
Which was very, very interesting. Yeah. For us. And one of the things that we wanted to do with that, and it was a bit of an experiment, was that, sometimes we just assume that everybody knows what the pace is and knows the rules. But if you think about it, a lot of that has been passed down from ride to ride. Or is kind of like buried in some of the text of a ride. So it was a good idea for us to play with, well, what if the ride leader could actually give some announcements? So you had no choice but to listen, so that now the ride leader is saying, this is the pace, this is how long we're going to ride for. And, the idea is to keep this as a group and not race each other. So I think we're going to see a little bit more of that coming in the pipeline.
Is Zwift happy with the way things have progressed over the Northern Hemisphere summer? Because it was obviously a pretty critical time for you. If subscriptions are kind of dropped off a cliff in summer, or the platform was deserted, then clearly there was going to be a bit of a problem for you. Now, it seems to me as though you've had a really good Northern Hemisphere summer. Is that right?
Yeah, we're very pleased. We make no illusions to the fact that you know, summer is a time when people want to ride outdoors, you know, and we want to encourage that. You know, one thing we always said at Zwift is that on a beautiful summer day, you should be outside. You should be riding your bicycle. You know, Zwift is here for people who for whatever reason, have to ride indoors, whether it's time constraints, coming back from injuries, whatever. Going into this first summer, because this, keep in mind, this was the first summer since we officially launched. We didn't know what to expect. It was a bit of an unknown for all of us. But yeah, we're very pleased, and we started realizing that Zwift is a thing, meaning that people sometimes actually choose to ride indoors rather than outdoors. We didn't know what to expect. We didn't know if all of a sudden Watopia would become a ghost town. So we're very pleased.
Well, certainly from an observer's position, it does appear to have been a good summer for you. Now, like you say, the virtual worlds have not been ghost towns, and that's got to be good news. Charlie, thanks very much indeed for spending time talking to the podcast. Always fascinating to hear from Zwift insiders. Thanks a lot, Charlie.
Bye, Simon. Bye.
Okay, guys, the big trade shows are coming up, and traditionally we have seen new trainers launched at Eurobike and Interbike and the other big shows. But the announcements seem to be coming out earlier and earlier and earlier, perhaps with the kind of growth of indoor cycling. The timing of the trade shows to introduce new trainers is now looking a bit late. And I don't think many of us know hardly anything about it, but TAX have just taken us a little bit by surprise with something called the TAX Flow, which looks like their kicker killer, I think, Shane.
It does. Actually, I'll correct you on that. TAX Flux. We haven't heard anything official. What we've seen is somebody commented on DC Rainmaker. He's a regular commentator, Bruce L, I think his name he goes under, put out a photo, which I think shouldn't have been released, but hey, it's out there now. So we had a chat about it on my YouTube channel today. And what we've seen is something very interesting. It's back to a direct drive. Looks like it has a belt. It looks like a step down from the Neo. And to be honest, that's about all we know of it.
Yeah, but cheaper than the Neo by the looks of it.
Oh, look, in Australia, nothing's really cheap. So we'll see when it comes out. But based on the Euro figure that we saw, because it's up on a few Dutch websites already, so they've sort of leaked it as well. So that's why I'm happily discussing it in public. Really interesting. And we also saw something from Team Sky at the tour as well.
Yes, the Kicker 2, which... to be honest, I was a bit underwhelmed about, but, you know, that was on the basis of kind of, paparazzi shots of the Kicker 2. We know no detail whatever, do we? And you'd expect them to do something quite big and new in the Kicker 2, maybe with the noise?
Yeah, look, the Kicker itself, I've discussed this again on my YouTube channel about the Kicker itself. It is about 3 years old now, but prior to that, this would have been 2 years in development. So you're looking at a unit that's about 5 years old. I was really surprised to see how similar what we think will be the Kicker 2 looks. Now, this, as I said on my channel, I think it may be the Kicker 1.5, could have been just a tease. The same base, so the same arms, but again, they've really proven themselves to be quite sturdy, still belt-driven. We don't know about the noise. Again, we'll have to probably wait for Eurobike for that to come around, but I'm happy with what I'm seeing. There's development, there's innovation, and there's also a few other manufacturers who are there's some rumbles from other manufacturers, so they'll keep these guys honest.
I know what you mean about that. Nathan, what do you ride?
I'm currently on the Powerbeam, is what I'm using mainly for my smart trainer. Cyclops and Saris Group is a sponsor of Vision Cycling, and I absolutely love it.
It's good kit. It's very good machinery. Haven't they got a new trainer coming out? The Hammer.
Yeah, and now I'm super excited about that. I've been talking to them about maybe doing a featured stream with it up here in the future. So I'm really excited, and I'm waiting for the Hammer to come out. They actually are 40 minutes from my house.
They're in Wisconsin, aren't they?
Yeah, they're in Madison, Wisconsin. They just built a new facility, actually. We're going to try and make a visit over there and check out the Hammer, and hopefully we'll have it on the stream. So yeah, I use the power beam, and then I, for my power source though, I'm usually on the G3 hub with a power beam for the feel of the ride.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we can't put off any longer talking about the Neo road feel, which I wasn't going to spend too long on because I ride a Neo. I know you've experienced the Neo, Shane. I think you've got a Neo as well. But to be honest, at the kind of price of the Neo, not that many Zwifters, I don't think, have them. Although it is a popular machine with Zwifters. So I'm not going to spend too long talking about it, but it would be kind of crazy to miss it out. And that is the road feel that the Neo has introduced. So for those who have not heard of it, what is it, Shane?
Look, the Neo itself samples your pedal stroke, I guess, or can apply resistance 1,000 times per second. So that's a lot of times in a pedal stroke. What they've thought they could do with that, and they've executed it perfectly, is use that 1,000 times per second to modulate the resistance to provide you different road feel. So just think about when you're going over a wooden bridge, you feel a da-dump, da-dump, da-dump in the car. You get that on the bike now. It comes through the chain, through the resistance. I've also got a cattle grate, which is the extreme. And I tried to ride 5 minutes on the cattle grate setting. My power was 50 watts down for a 5 minute interval and my wrists hurt. So it actually does work quite well.
It does work well. But, and people were concerned about this. You can feel it. I mean, the cobbled section in Watopia is amazing, but it doesn't cost you speed, does it, like it would do in the real world?
No, a lot of people were saying, there was a lot of interesting negative feedback from it, from both tax owners and kicker users, saying, it's a bit of owner bias, I guess, you've got there. But no, it doesn't. Speed on Zwift is all about watts per kilo and putting watts down. At an extreme level, yes, it will affect you being able to put watts to the pedals. But just for, if you're on, say, the gravel section, it's fine. It just sort of rumbles a little bit under your feet, but it doesn't stop you putting out more power and going a little faster. It's fine.
Yeah. I mean, my take on it is it's an extremely well-executed novelty that adds slightly to the richness of the experience. But certainly DC Rainmaker, who's an otherwise very sensible sort of chap, called it, a kind of life-changing, paradox-shifting game-changer, which I thought was a bit over the top, really.
Look, I liked it. I actually missed it on the London course. When I rode around the London course and I jumped on the plyboards they've put on the train track, I expected that feeling. And yeah. I sort of missed it when it wasn't there. So I become accustomed to it really, really quickly.
Yeah. And we shouldn't spend too much longer on trainers, but Zwifters do care. They care deeply about their trainers. Really interesting results that somebody had spent, obviously, a serious amount of time looking at the power output of an elite turbo Muin trainer compared to some other well-known trainers, which are known to be reasonably accurate and reliable. And that was a terrible result for the elite Muin. I mean, it was like misreporting by 80, 90, 100 watts. I mean, it was just completely off the scale. That makes races a nonsense, doesn't it, Nathan?
So I think there was I think it was 80 to 90 watts difference, and that's about three categories at least. So it's the difference between a Cat 3 and a high level professional, if you're looking at the Zwift races. And I know for sure that the race organizers are taking steps. Actually, we've been in communication, and as a broadcaster as well as a team manager within Zwift, there's been a lot of communication actually going on, not only publicly on the Facebook groups, but also behind the scenes in order to best handle these situations as classy as possible. And it's been handled very well, it seems like, to me. I know for sure there's this question of handicaps being out there, and I know for sure that some actually have been implemented here and there with a few different riders, just because some back-end tests were done. They said, hey, how about we try out a real power meter and see how your tests go, etc. And then they say, well, here's the difference. Let's make up the difference, etc. So I know that that's happening. There's nothing new here. To me, there's nothing new whatsoever. I said this on a broadcast today. On day one of Zwift, I was like, I'm an awesome pro, beating everybody. Here I go, rah, rah. On day two, a 14-year-old on the East Coast was whooping on me. And I was like, what is going on here? I'm horrible at cycling. And then on day three, I realized what Z-Power was. And I was like, oh, okay. And from that day forward, I started investing thought and my experience into incremental gains in the community. And I think that that is more of what we're seeing with this test that was released, that it's another incremental gain that we can make. And that's how we're going to get closer and closer to trusting Zwift with verifiable racing. And so when Zwift first launched, and this is just a little quick little thing here, that was the big wow moment, is that we could trust something to represent us in the game. That there's a certain amount of trust we're already given it. Even if our power to us is all that really matters here, that my Z power or whatever it is, it's specific to me, but it's that it's representing me some way in the game, and that we're incrementally increasing that trust between all of us in Zwift. And I think with how fast tech goes nowadays, tech advances exponentially, and I think that we're just going to keep seeing these advances as we all give optimistic and positive feedback to work toward a trusted environment for us to ride in and compete in with each other.
Yeah. Shane, I mean, when a manufacturer sees this, and I'm sure they do see these kinds of things, because I'm sure owners would draw it to their attention. What can they do?
Look, it's a really tough one. I've got a big post coming up about power meters and accuracy, and how that how most people nowadays are having multiple power meters. If you've got one power meter or one power source, that's effectively correct. That's all you really need. Now you've got two or three, you've got to line them up. And a lot of manufacturers aren't able to cope with, please, this one's reading high, one's reading low. How do we do that? There's only very few you can actually calibrate yourself and get correct. So look, I think it's important for the manufacturers these days to build into their units the ability to verify your calibration or your slope, and also ensure that that's actually 1 watt is 1 watt, or 100 watts is 100 watts, and that slope is correct. I think that's what they're now having to do. There's a lot of power meters out there that once they're set from the factory, you can't change them. So I think it's up to the manufacturers to really step up their game. I finally sourced a kicker calibration kit from Wahoo, which I've been using on a few kickers that I know have been out that are bringing them back into line. I do my own quarks to make sure they're verified and certified correct. So I think it's over to the manufacturers just to make sure that now we're using these things across the board in a social environment, and things like Zwift, which is a competitive environment, that they're all reading correctly.
Yeah. And of course, Zwift increases the pressure on the manufacturers because, in the past, they've always said, they haven't always said this, but they kind of mean it. It doesn't matter about reliability as long as we've got consistency. Well, that really is no longer true, to be honest, if you are comparing yourself against other cyclists all over the world, particularly in a racing environment. Suddenly, consistency remains important, but reliability becomes much, much, much more important.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah, okay, I think we've milked that point. Great to talk to you guys. Nathan, I hope the recovery continues apace. What kind of training volume are you going to be able to manage in the next week or so?
It just depends on fatigue level. It comes and it goes right now. It takes a lot of energy to heal a bone. So as I go with what the fatigue level is, and right now I'm doing somewhere between hour and a half to 2 hour rides. I'll have to lay another base foundation just a little bit, not like something crazy for months or anything, obviously, but I do have the goal of hopefully racing in September or early October. I'm one good race away from a series I've been after for a while. And so I'm excited to get back at training. I'm hoping to maybe put in a little bit more time on the bike tomorrow, actually, on Zwift. So, we're already looking at putting in some serious hours again.
Well, heal fast, dude. Shane, what have you got coming up in the next week or so?
Oh, look, I'm going to be putting all my winter training to good use. We're heading off up north to a place called Cairns, which is about 4 hours north of here, which means it's about 20 degrees warmer. Melbourne's nice. In a big freeze at the moment. So putting all that indoor training to use, and I'll be outside in the sunshine and looking forward to it.
Excellent. Thank you once again, guys. Always good to talk to you. And I look forward to speaking next time.
Thanks, lads.
Thanks, Simon.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. As we move towards the Northern Hemisphere winter, the podcast is going to get more frequent with a new episode every 2 weeks. That's thanks partly to some very kind support from Zwift, and I'm very grateful. But I'd also like to let listeners know that the Zwiftcast remains editorially independent of Zwift, so Shane, Nathan and myself are free to speak our minds. So that really is it. If you're on the trainer, push a little bit harder.